You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Since you're listening to this podcast, you are likely a pet lover. But why did you get a pet in the first place? My guess is because you sought the type of companionship and special form of love and attention that only a pet can give. You probably wanted to laugh at the antics that a crazy, furry, feathered, scaled, or finned animal can produce. So if pets are so marvelous, why are so many of them abandoned in vacant lots or relinquished to shelters? The answer is often their inability to meet the owner's expectations. Behaviors such as excessive barking, inappropriate elimination, hyperactivity, or aggression. But is their fault their own, but not our understanding of their psyche? Are these pets bad or just misunderstood and in need of some behavioral counseling? No, they don't need to lie on the couch, but sitting next to you while we chat today with Dr. Gary Landsberg, a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, may be the first step to a happier home for the entire family. So sit, stay with your pet, and we'll be right back with the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Landsberg, thank you very much for being with us, being a veterinarian and seeing pets on a daily basis with behavioral issues I know is a problem. How did you get involved in becoming a board-certified veterinary behaviorist?
Well, without going back too far, but I do go back fairly far, I too was a general practitioner who saw behavior problems on a daily basis. And said to myself that I am going to refer my difficult surgical cases to a surgeon, my difficult ophthalmology cases to an ophthalmologist, my more difficult cases of dentistry to a dentist, and yet there really wasn't a field yet of veterinary behavior. And there was the need for detailed behavioral analysis, including diagnosis, because a lot of dogs, like human mental health disorders and cats, have mental health disorders, not mental health illnesses, anxiety. And they needed the treatment of a veterinarian, but somebody who's more advanced in the field. So I got involved with the various groups that were doing behavior at the time. There was no board certification yet. Started seeing referral cases, went to the various seminars and lectures. There's a group that many veterinarians belong to who aren't board certified. It's an interest group called the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior. And I mention that because if I can also mention the website, avsabonline.org, they have some very interesting position statements and links to good behavioral advice. To finish it off, in the mid-90s, there was board certification available. I wrote the second exam that was available to us and got my board certification back in the 90s. And also, because I'm a member of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, also have been involved with the European group, so got board certification over there. And that way, we have some different approaches, but very similar approaches to behavior.
So this is marvelous. We're actually speaking today to one of the founding fathers of veterinary behavior. And I think you're so right. It can be so frustrating when I'm in an office call, the client comes in, I know that it is a behavioral issue, and trying to ferret out what could be the cause. Is it because it's a pet that maybe just was never socialized properly? Or is it something truly going on between the animal's ears? And probably the best example I have is I have a granddaughter. She's now a teenager. And she's always been one of these kind of problem kids at school. Very intelligent, but just sometimes behaviorally would get herself into problems, and finally got her into some counseling and found out that she has a medical condition. She's bipolar and she's on medication now, and she is so much better. She's still a teenager, but she's so much better. So you're right. There are times, Dr. Landsberg, when they do need a medical approach and not just, you know, a trainer.
You said something that's really, really important, because it points out why if you don't have a training problem, in other words, my dog won't sit nicely when people come to the door, my pet is house soiling, and even house soiling could be a medical problem, my pet needs to be trained to watch me better or walk better on a leash. Those are all training problems, and actually has a behavioral problem, whether it's house soiling or destructive or anxiety that isn't resolving, or it's an adult dog where these problems happen. There are two reasons that you should see your veterinarian first. The first one is there could be a medical problem, such as a bladder infection or bladder stones causing house soiling, or something more subtle, such as an endocrine disorder like thyroid disease causing behavioral changes. But as you said, many of these that we as behaviorists see have mental health disorders. We had a dog in yesterday, and I'm being a little bit facetious when I say this because it would be impossible to make the diagnosis, but both myself and the owner said at first, wondered whether the dog had Asperger's or autism type of disorder because of the way it couldn't focus and the way it couldn't learn. There's certainly borderline disorders that we might consider to be hyperactivity, depression and anxiety and phobias. In other words, mental health disorders. And therefore, no matter what training you give them, they also need medical care. So see a veterinarian. Veterinarian can decide whether it needs to see a veterinary behaviorist, or they can handle it themselves, or whether it can then go to a trainer because it's a training issue.
I think it's probably just a lot of people are sitting there with their mouths open right now going, autism in pets? You know, we just thought it was kind of a dumb dog, or there is really, I needed to train it more, or it was one of the rescue pets so many times. And I'm sure you hear this too, Dr. Landsberg, where say, oh, I rescued this dog and it must, or a cat, and it must have been abused as a puppy or a kitten because now it's just afraid of everything. Does that seem to be kind of one of the catch-alls that people come to you saying, oh, yes, it was abused?
Yes, I think a lot of people say to us that it was abused, and abuse can come in many forms. I mean, lack of socialization, lack of sufficient exposure to stimuli, not giving it all of its needs, both nutritionally and well, nutritionally, medically, and behaviorally, lack or not enough experience can be as much an abuse as abuses. And, you know, that might not be purposeful. It may be where and how the pet was brought up, but that's an issue. Abuse can also be with the best of intentions. Some dogs are very sensitive to change, and if you're inconsistent in training, probably too much punishment would be one of the big things in this regard, then, or punishment at all for some dogs, you can lead to aggression, anxiety, etc. And then we have genetics. So I think that the term abuse is way, way overused, unless you're referring to the fact that it just had a very poor upbringing. But don't forget the genetics. I also want to clarify one point. When I used the term autism, Asperger's, and some of these others, I was referring to the types of signs that we're seeing. And while the French do have diagnostic categories such as hypersensitivity disorder and dissociative disorder and dysthymias, in North America, we haven't put names on them because we can't ask the pets or prove what's going on. We really consider them to be general classification of anxiety and mental health disorders, but we're not labeling them yet. We're not using those terms yet, even though it seems that these problems may be very similar.
If you had a pet that was referred to you by a practitioner such as myself and saying, okay, this particular pet is just extremely fearful. You know, somebody comes to the door and it's maybe initially barks because, you know, it's just a warning. And then it's under the bed. You can't get near it. It's cowering. It tries to bite just because it's so fearful. What do you go through for a general background to try to learn what's been going on? What is a typical first consultation with you involve?
Well, in advance, I have them fill out a very, very detailed history. It's on my website, and people can check it. It's NorthTorontoVets.com. And when they go there, they can see the lengthy history we ask the owners to fill out. By the way, even though it takes them a tremendous amount of time to fill out the history and me a long time to read it, we still sit down and ask many, many, many questions about the history of the problem. But we don't have to deal with the ones that have already been dealt with on my history form, such as how many people in the family and what type of house they have. And we can get a detailed history of the problem. And the way we make a diagnosis is primarily and decide on our treatment plan and our prognosis, how much is going to be accomplished, is to take a history, find out all of the details of the problem itself, get video from the owner wherever we can, rule out any possible medical causes if the referring veterinarian hasn't done all of that yet, and some degree of observation of how the pet is doing in the office. We know what a normal animal will look like, but even then, what a pet does in our office is not always what it's going to do in the behavior problem. I don't see what it's doing at nighttime if it's a nighttime waking problem. I don't see what it's doing when the owners are away, and neither do they unless they take a video. So there is some medical diagnostics, but primarily it's history taking. When that happens, part two of the consultation is reminding owners that their pet is their pet, just like their child is their child, and there may be limitations on what can be achieved. You can't always achieve the outcome that they want. So we often call that managing the problem, and if there's an aggression problem, certainly determining whether it's safe to proceed at all. And then the final part of the program is how much of it can be improved, both with behavior modification and training and with drug therapy. And some of that takes time, revisits, additional visits, to see how much they've achieved. We do incorporate trainers and training products sometimes to help them implement the program, but you can see that's only part of the whole picture.
Thank you for bringing up that one topic also of trainers, because too often a client will come to me and say, oh, this dog has gone through trainers before, or I've had somebody come into the house who's a cat whisperer and will see my cats and, you know, I've done everything they've said and the pet's not any better, so why should I spend the money and see a behaviorist? I know the difference, but if you could explain what's the difference between a trainer and a behaviorist? And a board-certified veterinary behaviorist?
Well, board-certified means that they have the standards and qualifications, meaning the examination, the residency program, and the research projects that they have to do. There are plenty of veterinarians who do good behavioral work and just haven't gone through the certification process because it's expensive, just like there are plenty of veterinarians who do fantastic surgical work, and you're lucky that your case doesn't have to go off to a board-certified surgeon. We all, I hope, know our limits, and that's why you have to trust the veterinarian. As far as the difference between a behaviorist and or a veterinary behaviorist and a trainer, I kind of implied that or said that in the previous conversation, in that taking a history, ruling out the mental health disorder or ruling it in, using medication for the problem, determining the limitations and the management, and deciding what program is going to be best is the behaviorist. Implementing the program is the trainer helping you do it. The trainer is the one who, after the behaviorist has made the assessment, after the behaviorist has put the animal on medication if necessary, and is helping guide the owner through the program, is helping them to teach the dog to walk nicely on the street away from other dogs, to teach the dog to sit, settle, and focus away from other dogs, and then perhaps do a program where you can do gradual introductions. That would be a dog who's fearful and nervous of cars, people on the street, or other dogs. But the other important thing that is even maybe higher on the list than the last question, is it the right trainer? And there are trainers, including TV trainers, who use far too much confrontation, physical methods, which can sometimes work just because tough love and you're being tough, but they do not work for anxious pets. They make anxious pets more anxious. And therefore, most training is going to be reward-based. It's going to be positive. There's a lot of controversy about that. There shouldn't be. That's how behaviors, whether it's people or animals, give them rewards for what's deserved, and they want to do more and more to do those behaviors. If there is any punishment, it's really taking away privileges.
Dr. Landsberg, I think this is one of the most important things you intimated, television trainers. And I think we all know about one that's on TV. You're amazed, man, wow, in one show, he can take this extremely fearful dog, maybe afraid of walking on the street or is afraid of other dogs and is being aggressive. And in one show, that dog is now just that perfect pet. How do you find the right trainer, and what's a good approach for a trainer? What should you look for?
Well, what you should look against or not look for or not choose is a trainer that primarily uses correction, confrontation, or physical ways of being the leader, so to speak. We don't need to be leaders over the pets. That's an old term. It's not even used in wolves. Some of the wolf behaviorists now talk about a unit of wolves being a family with parents who guide and young who follow. So that really this sort of approach has got to be positive parenting. And I think when you're calm, when you're consistent, when you continuously reward what's desirable and not reward any of the other behaviors, you make improvements. And that's why the TV trainers sometimes are successful, not because of words such as dominance or leadership, and certainly not because of the confrontational part, but because of the calm approach, because of the consistent approach, because inadvertently sometimes you are rewarding the desirable behaviors, and that's what you should be doing. But when it comes to fear and anxiety, the two things you want to avoid completely are any type of correction or punishment-based techniques, whether it's called being dominant or not. You don't want to do that because the pet will become more fearful. And it's actually wrong to watch an animal that's better because it's no longer doing the behavior because it's too fearful of doing it. In other words, fighting fire with fire. It's suppressed, but it's not improved. And as I said, in many cases can lead to aggression. One of my colleagues actually found that if you confront dogs with no or alpha roles or dominance techniques that are already aggressive, about 30% of them or more will become more aggressive. I mean, we want techniques where no animals become more aggressive. 30% is a terrible number because I don't even want a technique where 1% of my pets might bite their owners. So again, look for reward-based trainers who understand learning principles. And there's even some certification now for these trainers.
Well, one of the rewards that we're going to have for you listening right now to Dr. Gary Landsberg and the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio is a short break where you're going to hear a commercial. We'll be coming right back and learn about some of the more common behavioral issues that Dr. Landsberg sees. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Introducing the new Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus, free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PetMeds. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PetMeds, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
Welcome to Sassy Seniors, a show about our fabulous older dogs and cats. I'm your host, Kelly Jackson. You know, I wanted to create a show to really showcase our senior pets. And, you know, as the human population ages and lives longer, of course, so are our wonderful pets. But many of us with aging pets, it's so interesting. We have a tough time realizing or really admitting that they are seniors. So, in a way, I kind of like to think of our senior pets as wise puppies. What do you think about that? Be sure to join us for another edition of Sassy Seniors. And remember, celebrate your senior pets.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Gary, this information that you're giving us is just so important. What are some of the more common behavioral issues that you see in cats and dogs?
Well, as a behaviorist, we're going to see the more serious problems, the ones that the general practitioner and his staff or her staff don't have enough time, knowledge, or expertise to handle, the one that hasn't improved with the trainer. So remember, we're seeing the mental health disorders and the more serious type problems with most of the cases we see. In cats, we will see management issues because there isn't, quote-unquote, a cat trainer out there, and it's really advice that you need. But refractory or not improving house soiling cases, urine marking cases, which usually means the cat is anxious, certainly aggressive cases, and then there are a number of disorders in cats and dogs that we would call maybe compulsive or impulse control disorders that include over-licking, unusual behaviors such as spinning, tail chasing, rippling skin. And when it comes to the dog, that same group of behaviors includes spinning, licking at one's own skin. Again, you have to rule out medical causes, snapping at imaginary objects in the air, licking things they shouldn't. And in dogs, aggression is high on the list for reasons that we see cases, and then anxiety disorders and fear and phobias such as separation anxiety would be second on the list. So those three general categories of aggression, anxiety and fear disorders, and the compulsive or repetitive type disorders would be the ones that we see. And then I know we were planning on discussing and wanted to discuss the issue of the fact that we also have a group of behavior problems that are quite specific to the senior pet. And that's an area where I perhaps see more cases than some others, because it's also an area that I've done a lot of writing and work and sort of have a part-time job consulting with a company that does research in that area.
I think that's marvelous that you brought that up, because pet owners are doing such a fabulous job now having that team approach with their veterinarian of extending that good quality of life for their pets. So they're living much longer than they've ever done before. And I'm sure you're going to say that what we're seeing as these pets get older, there's mental changes, there's physical changes can be done. And sometimes it's hard to say what's going on. Is it an Alzheimer's-like condition? We know that there are changes that are going on in their brain that are basically Alzheimer's-like. And what can be done? Because it really is heart-wrenching when you have that pet that sometimes you're not enjoying anymore because it's up all night, that cat that's yowling or the dog that's just that change behavior. Explain what you're seeing these days in these senior pets. What are the behavioral changes?
Well, one of the reasons I see a lot of these cases is that I was, and until even last year, in my own general practice. So like you, these are common problems that we start to see more frequently as pets age because they get more medical problems when they age. And we won't go back into that topic other than to say that in a senior animal that's got some behavioral issues, it's even more likely than a young animal that there could be some underlying medical problem and can take a lot of diagnostics to find that out. But assuming that it's not a medical problem such as pain or sensory loss or some sort of disease process, then the brain does age. And as you get older, every organ ages, and every organ that ages has signs associated with it. And while serious signs such as waking at night, I guess some people they call that a sundowner's type syndrome, or disorientation and confusion, not interacting with the owners or the other dogs or stimuli in its environment the way it did before. You could either be overreactive or underreactive. And house soiling, but the type of house soiling when the pet pretty well forgets where its previous house soiling or anything else that it's learned. The final one on that group is anxiety disorders, where pets just seem to be unsettled and anxious when they're older. And these all could be related to brain aging, which is an area that in my wearing the other hat, we've looked at to find that there are actually learning and memory deficits in these older dogs. And learning and memory deficits sometimes come years before those clinical signs. So the signs actually at first might be quite subtle. I gave you the serious ones, but it's really important that owners recognize and notice and tell their veterinarian when their pet is just not remembering something it used to remember, or starting to become a little bit disoriented or confused, or even less active than before. It could be a medical or behavioral problem, more anxious. Let the veterinarian know. Don't just say it's a sign of age or getting old. There may be something we can or should be doing about it.
So subtle definitely can be significant, even if you don't think it's something. You put all this information together, yes, it may indicate there's a problem.
Thing. There are actually a couple studies done already that only about 2 or 3 up to 12% of these cases are diagnosed because their veterinarians aren't told about the signs. Veterinarians need to know about them so they can help work out what the problem is. And the incidence may be as much as 25%, 30%, 40% in the older dog, 14, 15, and as much as 10% or higher in dogs that are 10 or older. So really important to report those signs.
And I'm sure that most pet owners are somewhat like I am when I go see my own doctor. I mean to tell them about a certain ache or pain or something that's going on in my body. And even though I'm a veterinarian and a doctor, by the time I get in there, I forget. Maybe that's a sign of aging. Or you get a little anxious and you forget to say something. You walk out the door going, oh, dang, I wanted to tell them X. I'll always tell my clients, keep a little diary. It doesn't have to be anything extensive, but write down what you're seeing and bring that diary with you when you see your veterinarian. So when we ask questions like, so any changes at home? You seen any changes in behavior? Oh, yeah, I meant to tell you. And now they can look at their journal and see what's going on in there. With you're talking about these signs that are normal with aging. Is there anything that they've found now that can either prevent or slow down some of that aging process? I'm listening with all ears because I want to use it for myself.
Yeah, I think you said one important point there, that not only should owners bring in that list, but you and I as veterinarians and all of our colleagues have to ask. We have to be very proactive in saying to owners, you know, tell me about everything. I want to know about everything, and try and jog their memories, maybe have a little checklist available, because we can't miss any of those signs. As soon as they're there, we can look for pain, we can look for medical problems, we can look, rule those out and get cognitive dysfunction. And early on, even theoretically, as well as the science that's been done on the various products that are out there, you have the best chance of treatment. Obviously, with any organ decline, and we know this from kidneys or liver or anything else, when you find it early, you still have quite a few healthy cells that you might be able to preserve. When you find it late, the damage is often irreversible or is irreversible. And dogs as a model, and even cats as a model for early Alzheimer's disease in people, in other words, that's the similarities that have been found in the dog's brain and the dog's testing and the dog's behaviors. They have very good models that show that they're very similar to early Alzheimer's in people. We know that the early treatments have some effect and the late treatments are just not going to do anything. So antioxidant type therapy can be therapeutic, but people throw all kinds of things at animals and themselves that maybe theoretically might work, but you really should use products that have data or are tested. There are two diets, one that's available through the Purina company that uses something called MCT oils to enhance utilization of energy in the brain, and there's one by Hill's that's a prescription diet called BD, which will have a whole bunch of antioxidants, and both of those have been shown in the laboratory and even in clinical science to reduce cognitive decline. There's a supplement that, believe it or not, is a jellyfish protein that helps stabilize calcium, which can damage brain cells. It's called Nutrix. There's a antioxidant supplement from Ceva called Senolife that has a product called phosphatidylserine in it. And there's a SAMI supplement. A lot of people are familiar with SAMI. There's a specific SAMI that one of the companies makes that has been tested in the brain to show that both in dogs and cats, this is the first one that was shown in cats, can slow cognitive decline or improve cognitive dysfunction, especially if you treat it early. So I mentioned five products on purpose, by name, because those are the ones that have been tested. There are many more out there that have not gone through any rigorous type of testing or any testing at all. And all of those, the earlier you use them, the better. And finally, there is one drug which both improves maybe your attention, your activity level, and even has an antioxidant effect called Selegiline, or the brand name is Anapril. And we usually use those farther along in the course of therapy. So there's a lot that can be done, but you may also have to do some behavioral work, like pet's not sleeping at night. What about keeping it awake during the daytime with the Anapril and more enrichment? I know it's lame or it's got arthritis, so let's find some other games to play, some feeding toys to play. Let's give it the daytime activity as well as the medication so it sleeps better at night. So don't neglect the behavioral part of the program, but yes, I'm glad you brought it up. There are some important products, both natural and the drug out there, that can help these pets.
And none of these medications, treatments are necessarily inexpensive. So people try to economize. And I know my clients will say, well, can I just go to Costco and get, you know, SAMI that's made for people and use it? And I'll recommend that they don't do it because, yes, Dr. Landsberg, you're exactly right. Having that testing done, knowing for a lot of these nutraceuticals that they are standardized, that somebody has said, yes, this amount is in there, we can guarantee it, versus just because a product is expensive doesn't necessarily mean that, though it says it has X on the label, that X is truly in that pill or in that liquid.
That's really important. Not only might the products be slightly different, but that standardization of over-the-counter products. This is even more important than using generic drugs that are made for humans versus veterinary drugs, because there's a level of quality control and standardization in a drug. But when you're looking at natural products especially, you've got to use the branded products that have been tested, because the others just may not work. When you look at supplements that have multiple things in them, for sure the combination of ingredients may be different, and it's often the combination that works. And look at all the human research. I mean, one research shows that the fish oils might help, and another research shows that fruits and vegetables might help, and another one shows that exercise might help. It's a combination of things that you need to use in the senior pet, and at least we've got some testing on some of those products.
And it very much is a balanced act, you know, and starting young. So many times people, you know, they have that bad back and, oh, I can't move. And, oh, by the way, I'm 80 pounds overweight. I haven't exercised. I haven't done anything. But now I want that pill that's going to make me better overnight. And I'll try to instill in my clients when they bring in that puppy or kitten, start now. Start with that end in mind of making sure that it keeps its weight under control, that you come in to see myself or another veterinarian for a well baby checkup, you know, at least once a year so you can catch a problem early on. So start that early healthy lifestyle and keep it going. You're going to be much better off in the long run.
Right. That's exactly right. And you know, see your veterinarian, get advice from your veterinarian. There's bad advice and there's good advice, especially when it comes to behavior. So make sure it's the right advice. There are websites that you can go to. Perhaps on your website you can put up that avsabonline.org and our college website, which tells what a behaviorist is, which is dacvb.org. But another thing you can do is go to my website, not because you're in the Toronto area and you want to meet me or see me, but because I have a tremendous number of links, including the websites that we just talked about, that send people to places I think are helpful and give appropriate advice as a behaviorist. You'll notice there's a part of my site that's for my clients only because it's got some of the more commercial links and we're not allowed to put those on our website. But certainly there's probably 30 or 40 different ones there that might help guide to the good sites on the web that have science behind them.
And there are some great sites, you're right, and then there are some sites that just because it's on the web doesn't mean that it is reputable information. It can be so wrong. So you get what you pay for sometimes, but if you go to the good sites like Dr. Landsberg, and we will have all these sites listed on our website, so for the Pet Doctor and Pet Life Radio, so they can go to it, they can learn, and they can get some good information.
I tell people you can always find the opposite advice to the good advice also on the website. For every A, there's a B out there, so you just have to know what to look at.
And you need to have somebody guide you, and you are the perfect guide to get them to the correct information. Dr. Landsberg, I appreciate everything you've told us today. I think it's so important for people to realize that the behavioral issue that they're seeing may have a medical basis to it, physiological, that needs some attention by their routine veterinarian, but may also need services such as yours, and there are medications and training that can help. So thank you so much. We do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Have yourself a great day. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how you can be one of the best pet owners possible. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz for The Pet Doctor. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.